Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're here to talk about the issues that can impact our lives. I believe what we need more of is positive input and even better outcome. We're not going to have a good outcome if we have a negative input. So I'm going to look at many different things from that perspective today, starting with health and healing and nutrition. Then I'm going to go to social issues. We're going to talk with a gentleman a little later on in the program in a two-part series. His name is Dana Allman, and he is one, if not the leading homeopath in the United States. And homeopathy has done a tremendous amount of good in helping individuals with their health. And yet you would never know it if you read Wikipedia. So we're asking you to walk away from Wikipedia. We've presented 74 articles and 9 letters to the board of directors of the Wikimedia Foundation and to Jimmy Wells, explaining why, in our belief, our opinion, their encyclopedia is a fraud. It serves the deep state. It serves financial interests. It serves political parties. It serves a big pharma. Well, and yet the public and the media act as if this is not the case. It is the case, in our opinion. We've documented it, not hearsay. So we should call it out for what it is and then stay away from it. So they've denigrated homeopathy, saying there's no science to support it. We will prove the science from the peer-reviewed literature today, because that could help you. Also today, I'm going to give my own opinion about what I see wrong with the way we're approaching social change on all levels today, and whether it's how we're dealing with coronavirus, how we're dealing with global warming, how we're dealing with the bankruptcy of our entire economic and personal systems of financial management, and even a different approach to dealing with racial issues. And I'm going to start that discussion by talking about what I learned on the very first day when there was no other media there with the Occupy Wall Street group, because that was a forerunner of what we're seeing today. And so I'm going to revisit that. And by the way, I filmed that. I was there for 23 straight days before Michael Moore and others saw that there was an advantage, you know, in public relations to be there. No. I wanted to see, what is this about? Is this legitimate? Can I support this? And I'll give you my feedback. But then I'm going to give you a history lesson today to share with you about why we have to keep it positive. We begin with the latest on health and healing. With this study, which is from Freie University in Berlin, they found that extracts of wormwood, worm, W-O-R-M, wood, W-O-O-D, are active against SARS coronavirus 2. Now, chemists at the Max Planck Institute of Colloids and Interfaces, which is in Potsdam, Germany, in close collaboration with virologists from Freie University in Berlin, have shown in laboratory studies that aqueous, meaning water, and ethanolic extracts, which means alcohol, of specially bred sweet wormwood plants are active against the new coronavirus that has caused the COVID-19 pandemic. And human clinical trials to test the efficacy of both teas and coffee containing this, what is called annuas, A-N-N-U-A-S, and also its anti-malarial drug, are about to begin at the University of Kentucky Academic Medical Center. So this is something that has been used historically for millennia in Asia, Africa, South America. It's been used to treat infectious diseases. So extracts of the A. annua plants, which is wormwood, have been successfully employed to treat febrile diseases, including malaria. And artemisian is extracted from this plant and is the basis for the World Health Organization recommended anti-malarial combination therapies used in millions of adults and children every year with few, if any, side effects. And so I wanted to show that there is something natural and non-toxic that could be used, and I would certainly support that, because it has 1,000 years of use on hundreds of millions of people. And now the scientists have been able to find the most active fractions of it. And so this is a natural combination therapy against infection. So that's good. So we have not done anything in our rush for a drug or rush for a vaccine to look at all the plant extracts that exhibit viral plaque formation, and we should. And so good for them for doing this, and I'll keep you in the loop on how this stays. Would I accept the antibody test? Absolutely not, unless they could show me the scientific literature that the PCR, by the scientific literature and by the founder of the PCR, Professor Kary Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1996 for discovering it, because I knew Kary. I filmed him. And he said very clearly and unequivocally, never use my PCR test to determine if a person has active HIV infection, because that's not what it does. But they're using the same technique to show that you have the coronavirus. And it's not meant to do that. That's not what it does. And to give you a little background on this, I have posted a video about 18 minutes long of Kary Mullis in an interview I did back in the 1990s. It's a really good interview because he is not one to bear fools well. And he went after Robert Gallo and the whole AIDS establishment for the wrong science that they were applying. He was not alone. He was just probably one of the most famous people to do it. Quietly, I interviewed two people. One at, and by the way, they're both two of the most famous scientists in American history. They were both professors and chairmen of department at University of California, Berkeley. One was a Dr. Bailey, and the other was a Dr. Stroman. And they're both professor emerituses. I don't know if they're still alive. But when I was speaking with them and filming them, I never released the footage of this, and they both said that everything we're doing when it comes to battling HIV infection, we're doing wrong. And they explained why. And here's two of the greatest minds in American science, virology and molecular biology, together saying that what Kary Mullis was saying was correct. So we were misdiagnosing it, and we were mistreating it, and hence the high proportion of deaths from the treatment itself. And in other words, healthy young men, mainly AIDS, defined as asymptomatic, meaning they had no disease manifestation, many of these people, but they were HIV positive. They were put on very high doses of AZT, and they died. They were over-medicated, hyper-medicated. We're doing the same identical thing today with COVID, and we're using the same false study. So this whole antibody test, which only about under 2% of the American population have had, has been misconstrued. It's got high false positive, high false negatives, and then they're putting people on protocols based upon if they're COVID positive or COVID negative. Everything about what they're doing is wrong. I'll get into that in greater detail. I'm going to do a whole hour on that next week. In any case, now we're looking for natural, non-toxic therapies that can help you with a myriad of viral infections. Oh, and by the way, if you think that it's not a big deal, Reuters today, quote, coronavirus may have infected 10 times, that's 1,000% more Americans than reported, CDC. Okay, now pull back and say, what does this mean? It means that it's far more infective, far easier to contract, but it's also far, far, far less deadly, unless you are a person in a high-risk group. And now we know that the high-risk groups are people who should be separated, protected, and given therapies for their existing comorbidities, the existing treatments for congestive heart failure, emphysema, cancers. Those are the conditions that should be treated by the specialists in their field and not treated by a COVID protocol, because that seems to be what's killing them. In mass, 55% minimally have died. So if this was as deadly as they claimed, then we would have seen dead people across the spectrum from 1 month old right up to 80. But we haven't, and we won't. So they played this. So this has now been a weaponized, politically weaponized, ideologically weaponized pandemic, which it is not. It is also at this moment, the best science we have shows that it was made. And I went through this in some detail. I'm going in greater detail of how we know that it was human made and enhanced potency, meaning they made it more powerful, more potent using bats, but also could have infected pigs. And all the evidence of this will be given in a one-hour special next week. In any case, so if something is that lacking in mortality, then why in the world didn't anyone take a look at all the children in daycare centers that were being, and to this day, hundreds of thousands who are the children of the responders and people who had to go out and be a part of the effort to stop coronavirus from hurting people, their kids don't have the disease. And it's not been shown in a single case that it can go from child to adult. So we would see all these kids with COVID virus, and we don't. We don't see any of them with it. And we see all these school children around the world, and we don't. A few of the young people who have died have already had comorbidities. They had like leukemia, cancers, etc. So we have been lied to. This is not unintentional. Anthony Fauci is good at this. He's the one who was behind the whole fiasco with, and I believe should be held responsible for the untimely deaths of all those people who shouldn't have died. And how do I know? Because they poured by the hundreds per month into the Tri-State Healing Center with their partners having died and they sick as can be because they were using AZT and DDI protease inhibitors. And when we cleaned up their body, cleaned up their blood, put them on immune modulating programs, we saved their lives. Not one single person died. 1,200 people. There's no place on the planet. No place. I defy Robert Gallo. I defy Anthony Fauci. I defy you dancing idiot clowns in science. Show me another place where you had 1,200 advanced persons with AIDS and not one single one died over a 15-year period. And you reversed the complete disease in 15 out of 15. You cured 15 people. C-U-R-E-D. Cured 15 people. You can't show one. And yet you are the experts. You are the only opinion. You are the ultimate truth. This is what's wrong with everything in America today. The experts are idiots. They're experts in manipulation and gaining power. They are not experts in saving your life. Otherwise, we'd have had cures for cancer, cures for every mental condition, cures for, but that's a different argument. What I'm saying right now is everything we've been told about coronavirus and what we should do and how they should control our lives has been wrong. But they still have the control. So that's why we're seeking to motivate physicians. If you have corona patients, why don't you try intravenous vitamin C starting at 50,000 milligrams going up in 25,000 units every week? Why don't you try intravenous ozone? Why don't you try homeopathics and vitamin D at high doses and vitamin C orally, selenium, zinc, and known and proven in the peer-reviewed literature upper respiratory tract antivirals such as astragalus. And now we can add wormwood to that. So, from the Taijin University of Traditional Chinese Medicine comes a study published in the BMC's Complementary and Alternative Medicine that a compound in horny goat weed can promote cartilage repair. That's good when you consider how many people, especially over the age of 50, have really bad cartilage. So when they use this in combination with hyaluronic acid, it had a substantial repair phenomena. So that's good. So just one more piece of puzzle that helps people in a natural, non-toxic way. And also, from the University of Belgrade, this was a very interesting study. It's published in the peer-reviewed journal Current Nutraceuticals. And what they did is they took a look at natural compounds that have pharmaceutical-like properties in slowing aging processes by delaying or preventing the development of multiple chronic diseases. And the review focused upon nutraceuticals that act as calorie restriction mimickers by reducing insulin-like growth factor, or IGF-1, receptor signaling, and increasing the activity of proteins known as sirtuins And what they found, it really, really, really works. So if you want to extend your life, they're suggesting that the B complex will do that. Inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L, that will help. Resveratrol will help. Green tea will help. Cacao will help. And epicatechin will help. Blueberries, grapes, carotenoid, lycopenes from the carotenoids, tomatoes, and all those together are important, plus good intestinal flora. And so that's a piece of the puzzle. We can validate that because of our own anti-aging studies. But good for them. So you see, we've been on the right side of history all along. And what's interesting is last night I was looking through some videos, and some were sent from, I don't know who sent them, I don't even know who take them, just amateurs took pictures of, you know, videos of us dancing over the years. And then I saw some of the running club, and it was the annual, this was 1993, I'd never seen this tape, and it's of an awards ceremony for the Natural Living Running Walking Club, and there are 22 people that were given awards. And to get an award, you had to have won a national championship. And mind you, these are big deals. I mean, this is the USA track and field. So you're up against the best competitors in your competition and your age in America. And we had people like Joan Rowland and Queenie Thompson, Thelma Wilson, Sam Skinner, Franco Pantone. We had all these people, Julie Ratner, all of them had won multiple national and regional championships. One had won 22 championships in 1 year. All of them had something in common. They were all just regular non-athletes. So that's what's possible. They were all vegans. They all engaged in meditation, stress management. They all juiced. They took their supplements. And later we'd find their biological markers showed they were younger at a biological level, as much as 20 years younger than their chronological age. And so I was watching that thinking, wow, now I was so proud to see how well they had done. And some of them are still competing to this day, like Sam Skinner. And it was just wonderful. Anyhow, then, so a lot of these got posted up on PRN.fm. And, or you go to where it says subscribe, and you don't have to subscribe anything. It takes you to YouTube, and they're right up there on top. And there are thousands of you, thousands, like 500 people in one meeting in Central Park, and 4,000 people at one dance party. Like to see how you look then and how you look today. Then we'll see who's been sticking with the protocols all these years. And I'll bet that some of you look just about the same as you did from 1990. Oh, I know you. I've seen many of you. You do. So if you were doing this all along and other people thought you were crazy or belonged to a cult or you were had lost your marbles, they were wrong. You were right. And look at the difference. From University College London, published in the International Journal of Epidemiology, obesity is linked to higher dementia risk. Remember I said you can't be obese, you can't be overweight and be healthy? This is just the latest study. In fact, you have a 31% increased risk of dementia than those whose body mass index is within the normal range. So all the more reason to get the weight off. I'm going to be starting. I just spoke with him early this morning. Hello? Hi. Yep. Who is this? This is Gary. I get up at 4, so anybody I'm going to call, I'm going to call early. Woke him up, but he's going to come on the radio and we're going to film him because he's going to be the new Fred Fisher. And if you want to know Fred's story, it's a 7-minute clip. Go up to PRN.fm on the left-hand side, scroll down, you'll see Fred Fisher. And for the next year, I'm going to work with him and see if we can't help all the other people who are overweight and who've got all kinds of problems get their health back. Reverse their aging process, get back to that vitalism. We can do it. And he'll be your guide. He'll be the voice out there doing it. I'm just giving him the protocols and helping him through each step. he's now getting all of his medical tests taken, and that'll take a couple weeks, and then we start. And I'll have him on the radio program so you can hear his story from himself. We did the same thing with Fred Fisher. That's why we have that film today. Anyhow, he's half of Fred's weight. He's 350. Fred was 740, but the same have the same underlying health problems. So he'll tell his story, and we'll be able to see his progress month to month. And hopefully some of you will join in from home, and we'll do a monthly Skype or Zoom where you'll see him giving you his input, and then all the other people want to help do the same thing can be on the same protocol. Just a way of helping more people with the technology we have today. And also, one last thing here, boosting antioxidants, there's your vitamin E and vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, could improve psychosis outcomes. Dalhousie University in Canada. So, for people who are having some psychotic episodes, get the antioxidants in their system and it can make a big difference. Help them in a tremendous way. This was published in Molecular Psychiatry. So good for them. And by the way, if you've been doing Tai Chi and Qigong, that's Qigong, you can help yourself with depression and anxiety. This is from Shenzhen University in China. So that's the latest on health and healing. We are 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to go to a gentleman, and he has something interesting to say, and he's going to talk about what he sees are the types of people you cannot help. It will never work. His name is Daniel Alley, A-L-L-Y. I'm guessing he is in his early 30s, late 20s, very articulate, a very deep thinker. But a lot of us have tried to help people, and over and over again, because we saw potential in them. We saw someone who begged for help. We saw someone who needed help, and if they didn't get it, would die. And no matter what we did, they didn't change. Or if they did, it was superficial, and then they reverted back. So this is just a way of seeing, can you identify any of these types in the people you've tried to help, and what were the outcomes? I'd like your feedback after the clip. And then I'm going to go to part two of what we started yesterday with Professor Haidt about how do we get to where people today feel that when they go to college, they're there for one thing only, to feel good, and everyone else is to make them feel good, and they don't want to take a test. And now the movement is in many universities and groups, we don't want a test. You don't test us. You give us an A and we graduate. We don't have to go to class if we don't, because that makes us feel oppressed. That makes us feel invisible, as if somehow you have control over our lives. We don't want you to have control. And you think, my God. And what exactly are these people supposed to do when they get into the real world, where the rest of us live, where no one's going to, you know, float you on this ethereal bubble throughout the day like your parents and other people have? And the university are coddling these people. They're acquiescing. The leadership in the universities are cowards, gutless cowards. They're letting these immature brats get away with this. And then they're the ones you see on television yelling and screaming and demeaning and vulgar. Where did they learn that?
Hey, my friends, it's Daniel Alley, and today I want to talk with you about seven types of people that you cannot change. Look, you might be a good person yourself, but you know in your life that there's people that you cannot change no matter how hard you try. They're ignorant, they're stubborn, they will never change. So I'm going to share with you seven types of people. Once I get through this list, you're going to say to yourself, wow, now I understand exactly what I need to do and how I need to think in order to deal with these people effectively. So listen up. The first type of person you can never change are victim-minded people. Now I'm going to tell you straight up that these are the majority of people that you'll interact with. They blame other people, they make excuses, they're naysayers, and they always have something negative to say. You see, most people study the news. They study negative interactions. They dwell on the negatives, like worries, fears, insecurities, inadequacies, and other negative thoughts. Look, my friends, I want to tell you straight up. that if you're dealing with a victim-minded person, someone that's always criticizing, complaining, and condemning people, places, and things, then you need to avoid this person, and you need to understand that there's nothing you can do to really help them. Because they're not willing to change. They're not willing to accept responsibility. They're not willing to say, you know what? It's my fault. I have to do something about it, and I need to become better. You see, my friends, you have to understand that if you're willing to change, then that's a start. If you're willing to grow, if you're willing to do the work, then you have to focus on you. Just understand that you need to work on your mentality, and eventually your reality will change as well. Don't worry about the person who has the victim mentality. The second type of person that you cannot help at all are self-righteous people. You ever met someone and they always think they're perfect? They think they know it all. They think that they're better than you. And if you interact with these people, there's nothing you can do to convince them that they're not. You see, these people are filled with ego. They're filled with pride. They feel like they're better than other people because they have deep insecurities that they've never faced themselves. When they look at other people, they believe that other people are bad and they talk down to them because in reality, that's how they feel about themselves. You see, what you see in other people is really what you see in yourself. And if a self-righteous person thinks that they're better, that means that they believe that they're worse than the person that they think that they're better than. You need to come to a conclusion that a self-righteous person is completely selfish. They're unwilling to change because they don't even think that they have to change. They don't even believe that anything is wrong with them. In fact, they believe that they're God or that they're one with God. So much so that if you keep on talking with them about what they're doing wrong, they're just going to shun you. They're just going to tell you that you're wrong and they're going to make you feel like you'll never be good enough to even help them. So just leave them alone. The third type of person you can never change are desperate people. I mean, think about all the desperate people in your family. Think about some desperate friends that you've had in the past. People that are willing to do anything and everything in order to tarnish their own reputation or the reputation of their employers or their friends or their family. You have to understand that desperate people want maximum gain, but they want to put in minimal work. So whenever someone says that they want a quick fix or they want to join a company because they want to just make money, you have to understand that that person only sees the glory. They don't understand the story. They don't understand exactly what they need to do to become the kind of person to work at that company, or to get promoted, or to start a business, or to make great gain that will last them in the long term. They want a quick fix. They want magic. They want it to just pop in the air. They just want to see it come to fruition. That's why millions of people play the lottery. They believe that if they put in $1, they're going to get $10 million or $10 billion. They're desperate for money. They're desperate for change, but they're going about it in the wrong way. They want a millionaire banging on their doorsteps, willing to give them a big check for whatever amount that they want. Desperate people are very easy to recognize. They're always sweating. They're always begging. They're always looking for a way to swindle someone or manipulate a person. If you see desperate people in your life, try to stay away from them. You don't want anything to do with their baggage. The fourth type of person that you can never change are deceptive people. People who are always lying. They're always cheating. They're always stealing. They're always manipulating. They're always seducing. They're always flattering. If you know these kind of people in your life, then you need to watch out. Because these are the same people who are two-faced. These are the same type of people who will backstab you. These are the same type of people who will make sure that they will burn the bridge and make sure that you get the bad side of the deal. So you need to understand who they are. Now you might be asking, how do I know if someone is going to deceive me? How do I know if someone is lying? How do I know if someone is cheating? How do I know if someone is going to steal or if they're manipulating or flattering or seducing me? Well, usually you can tell by their mannerisms. Usually you can tell by the way they speak, because what comes from their heart will usually come out of their mouth. Usually they'll talk about their plans, and so you have to be perceptive. You have to understand exactly who you're dealing with and make sure to ask them the right questions. You see, you cannot answer your questions about this person. You have to question your answers about this person. You have to make sure to understand their intentions by asking yourself, why is this person here? What are they really about? Because every single person has the motive. What's in it for me? And it's okay to have that motive for yourself. But if you know someone that's really close to you in your life, that's only trying to take, and never give, then you need to be smart about the people you're surrounding yourself with. Now, the best way to understand the people around you is to check yourself first. Because if you know for yourself that you're honest, that you're filled with integrity, that you have the perfect character that you need right now to get to the place you need to be, then you'll understand exactly how you think. You'll understand exactly how you need to react. You'll understand exactly who you need to kick out of your life and how to deal with these people that you're interacting with. The fifth type of person that you can never change are disloyal people. Now, I've had a lot of people who've worked for me in the past, and the biggest way that I've discovered who are really disloyal is whenever they say that I'm the most loyal person that you know. Most people who are very loyal don't normally say that. They don't normally preach about how loyal they are and how long they plan to stay with the company. They just stay with the company. They just stay by your side. You can usually trust them because they're not always telling you about how much you need to trust them. You just trust them because you feel their vibe, you know their spirit, you know they want to help, you know they have the right intentions, you know that they're loyal, you can see it with your own eyes. Now you might be asking, well, Daniel, how do I know I'm dealing with a disloyal person? Well, it's very simple. All you need to do is ask yourself, can I be around this person for the next 5 years? What about 10 years? 20 years? 50 years? Put it through the timeline and try to see for yourself and imagine if you can actually go the distance with this person. If you're still not sure about this person, then you need to ask them about their goals. Ask them about their motives. Ask them about their ambitions. And usually there'll be some kind of signal that they're disloyal to you. Now on the other side, there's a chance that you'll find out that they are loyal to you. But in the end, no one really knows. All you can do is ask the questions. All you can do is make the right judgment. But you never want to make the wrong assumption, because misjudgment is the thief of all opportunities. And if you end up firing or getting rid of someone that's loyal in your life, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. So make sure to understand exactly who you're dealing with and see if they pass your loyalty test. The sixth type of person that you can never change are doubters. You see, there's a lot of people that are very skeptical. They think everything is a scam. They think everything is fake news. They think everything is farcical. So you need to understand that if you're dealing with someone that's very doubtful, that you cannot be around them for too long, because eventually their doubts will start to rub off on you. They'll start asking you, well, how do you know it's true? And then you'll start questioning your own beliefs. You'll start questioning your own philosophy. You'll start questioning your own truths that you've already accepted months, years, decades ago. So make sure to reinforce your faith by asking yourself, am I surrounded by anyone in my life that is filled with doubt? If you are, make sure to check them out and cast them out of your life if possible. Now, if someone is really close to you, maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's your kids, maybe it's family members or close friends or coworkers, and they're always doubting, then you need to use this as research for what you need to do. Because usually when someone is doubtful, they'll tell you exactly what not to do. So for instance, when I started my business, someone was telling me, oh, Daniel, if you start a business, you're probably going to fail. And they gave me all the reasons. They enumerated it all. And then I realized, you know what? This person's absolutely wrong. I need to not take their advice and do exactly the opposite of what they're suggesting. And I did that, and it changed my life. So if you have any doubtful people, make sure to do what I call the opposite equivalent, the exact opposite of what they recommend. If you do it like I did, it can change your life. The seventh person that you cannot change are quitters. Look, quitters will always quit. They will always have the loser mentality. They will always be inconsistent. They will always tell you that they're going to do it, but they never will. And if you see that there's people like this in your life, then you need to understand who they are. You need to say to yourself, you know what? This person's a quitter. They've quit all these jobs. They've quit all these opportunities. They've quit on themselves. There's nothing I can do to push them even further. Now you might be saying, well, Daniel, you can't quit on quitters. I'm saying that's exactly what you need to do. If you know that there's someone in your life that you're very close to that is always quitting on everything they start, then you need to give up on them. You need to say, you know what? I've tried my best. I've given it my all. It's time to let them go. But only do it if you know you've done your best. Don't do it if you've made a subtle attempt. Don't just quit on them if you know that you've just only...
Okay. Does any of that resonate with the people in your own life or possibly even yourself? Because after this last anti-aging study, all of those came up in different people. Now, fortunately, by the end of the study, because we were all in the same environment, it was necessary to get very disciplined. And people did, and we had spectacular results. But that's when you're with someone in a clinical setting so that they can't do whatever they want at home. I've had people leave my office with terminal conditions. I've given them 3 hours of my time for free, and they go downstairs to a hamburger joint and have a hamburger and a Coke and smoke a cigarette. Well, that's the people give up. The people are going to start something, and then they'd never finish anything. They always have an eye on the exit. And then there are people that do stick with it. Fred Fisher is one of those. I've had many people stick with it, and we've had, in fact, so many good results that Sharon, our archivist for, I don't know, 30 years, Sharon is putting together the actual testimonials, and we're also going through old footage here because I have about 5,000 film testimonials before and after to show you people can stick with things, can change their perception, change the reality, so all the negative traits they may have had, they no longer have. So the good news is we can change. In that respect, very quickly before we go over to this other segment, I'm going to hold Professor Height's segment till our next program because I want to give our homeopathic and Dana Ullman a segment. It's a three-part segment. We'll have it today, the next day, and the day after on homeopathy. It's very, very going to be very detailed on which homeopathics work, how many studies there are. It's into the hundreds of peer-reviewed studies on PubMed that homeopathy works. Then why is it being attacked? We're going to get into that. But when I went down on the first day of Occupy Wall Street, and you'll see how this connects to what's going on today with some people, not all, I thought it was a noble and worthy experiment that they were conducting. So I went down, and there were, I'm guessing, around 200 to 300 people, mainly young people. And so I began to talk with them. I spent 8 hours there. And here is the typical person, generally someone who's in their early 20s, comes from an affluent background, a person who's in college or graduated from college. Most were in college. And so what are you opposed to? Well, we're opposed to neoliberalism. Good. Okay, I am too. And what else? You know, the corporatization of all things and how corporations rule, and we're opposed to that. We want the power to come back to people. Good for you. I support that also. And this you would hear, they'd all be around and they'd all be asking me questions about why am I there? And I said, I'm here because I'm a cipher in the sense that I'm taking information and then sharing it with a larger audience who hopefully will be in support of what you're doing. But then I noticed something, and the more I looked, the more carefully I looked, the more apparent it was. So then I asked some questions. I said, what part of globalization are you against? We're against all of it. Okay. Do you support women's rights? Of course. And someone made some nasty comment about, you know, why wouldn't we be, you know, as if I was a dinosaur? I said, good. I said, I'm gonna show you something. And I pulled off the back of my shirt. I just pulled it to the side. And I said, what do you see? Well, I don't know. You see a label. That label is based upon it's American-made with union labor. That's how much support I believe in for women and men, but it's mainly women who are the people working within the garment industry in the United States. And I used to be the nutritionist for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. I helped them lose thousands and thousands of pounds. I work with them every week. Excuse me. And so I know what they go through. And they work long and hard, and their union work long and hard to get them these rights. Will you please show me where your garment's made? And so they started to show their garments. They were made in Bangladesh. And I said, you are aware that in Bangladesh, these women make 14 cents an hour. They work all day. They get home late at night. They have to walk home. They can't afford public transportation. They have to make their meals for their family, make themselves some food, and then get up early in the morning. They have the shortest work life span of any group in the world. I think it's like 33 years. I said, so what you're dealing with is you're dealing with an unintentional consequence of not being aware of where what you use comes from. I said, no, you're all eating fast foods, hamburgers, Burger King, McDonald's, that's globalization. That's neoliberalism. That's also destruction of the quality of a sentient life, an animal. That's destroying the environment. And pesticides and GMOs. And they were kind of looking kind of startled. I said, do you have a credit card from a union bank or People's Bank? Or do you have your main credit cards? And they all had main credit cards. I said, so you're wearing Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein clothes, Nike sneakers. Now, Nike exploits its laborers. Some of those women have been paid so little they cannot afford to feed their family. And yet here's Colin Kaepernick, not at that time, but there are others who were equally responsible, like Tiger Woods, et cetera, dozens and dozens of athletes who would take millions of dollars for endorsement deals with Nike and choose not to address the exploitation of people of color and indigenous people around the world. Now, not because they couldn't figure this out or find this out, but because they chose not to have this conflict with the money they were putting in their pocket. It's very easy to be self-righteous and virtue shame when you're the person gaining all the profit and the power and you have the microphone. It's something else when you're the person who's making those clothes and outfits and sneakers and someone else is making huge money and not helping you. So when I brought this to their attention, they got angry. They were self-righteous, but they were also extremely narcissistic. And now it went from a normal conversation to shouting. And I just listened, and I filmed it. And I thought, wow, you're the future. Okay, at least I know what's coming. And so don't look for some of us who have been in the public arena for a long time to gently step aside and go into that dark, long night, because we're not going to. And I thought, my God, this is the most immature, intellectually vacuous, socially disconnected, and completely spiritually devoid group I've ever seen. And I went around the country, Philadelphia and Fort Lauderdale. I went everywhere, in Washington, D.C., wherever the Occupy groupments were, and I wanted to see what more they were trying to do. And they would all get up and speak in unity because they didn't want to use, you know, a bullhorn. They were trying to recreate like a people's congress. But what was the ultimate end to it? Everything became, can we get tents? Can we get food for people? But nothing happened. Nothing changed. They coined the concept of 1%. Well, it's not 1%. If you look at how much money and how much power those who have power, who are policymakers and opinion leaders, have, it's about 13%. 13%. We have 10 million millionaires. We have 17 million professional class who are part of the policymaking and opinion leading, not just the uber billionaires. And these are the people who control everything in our society, including the media. So was there any challenge to the media? Nope. Any challenge by actual doing something? No. But boy, out there, you know, yelling at the top of their lungs, that they could do. I'm seeing a lot of that today. And I see a lot of people emphasizing the need for violence. Okay, I believe that we're going to have an extremely high amount of violence, and that will weaponize the movement that had legitimacy into becoming one that becomes a dominant power, seeking utter power. But let us just remember that for those of us, many of you who believe in nonviolence and believe in protests with boycotts where we withdraw our energy, our money, and our support from things we no longer want to be a part of, there's good reason to be confident that if we stay together in our nonviolence but speak the truth to power, we may be able to make a difference. In 494 BC, the conflict in orders, nonviolent and bloodless protests organized by lower class Roman citizens protesting the social structure the government put in place that favored the privileged, what we have today. These protests lasted until 287 BC. That's a long protest. These histories gradually over time gave the average person, the plebeians, more rights. 1834 to 1838, the end of slavery in Trinidad. Peaceful protests by slaves of African descent that led to the liberation of slaves. 1846, Henry David Thoreau's refusal to pay taxes in opposition to slavery. It landed him in jail, but that was a positive statement, and it led to others making similar statements. 1860 to 1918, the Tainiu Waikato movement, the indigenous Moris of New Zealand, were forbidden to use violence against the British. It led to a long history of protests started by the Maori king and resulted in British stopping, conscripting them for military service. It had a positive outcome. 1930 until independence, Mahatma Gandhi, the Salt March in 1930 and subsequent protests until independence. In 1913, the suffrage parade, 5,000 women demanding equal political participation, led by lawyer Inez Milholland, the woman who was called the Lady in White. And it made a huge impact on women across the United States, becoming invigorated and aware that there was a movement for their equal rights. 1919, the March First Movement in Korea, a nonviolent movement that later became an inspiration for Gandhi's nonviolent resistance in the movement. In 1919 to 1922, the Egyptian Revolution, nonviolent protests against British occupation that led to Egyptian independence in 1922 and a new constitution. In 1936, the Flint sit-in, 135,000 workers strike in 35 cities to solidify the United Auto Workers due to General Motors executives shifting workloads to non-union members. 1955, Rosa Parks bus ride. 1957, the start of the plowshare movement by Catholic clergy and nuns, particularly the Daniel Berrigan, nonviolent resistance against nuclear weapons arsenals. 1960, Martin Luther King, including the March from Washington to Lincoln Memorial. In 1963, there were 200,000 marches. In 1967, the National Mobilization Committee to End the War in Vietnam, the largest anti-war demonstration of flower power in front of the Pentagon. Cesar Chavez, 1960s, Delano Grape Boycott, a 25-day hunger strike to stop abuse of overworked farm workers. 17 million Americans boycotted California grapes. In 1969, John Lennon, Yoko Ono's bed for peace in Amsterdam, the Hilton, and again in Montreal. In Estonia, in 1988, the Singing Revolution, 100,000 Estonians gathered and sang their freedoms from Soviet rule. Eventually, 4 million people, including Latvia and Lithuania, became free. In 1988, I would challenge her today, but Aung San Suu Kyi's nonviolent movement for freedom and democracy that led to the victory of the Democratic Opposition Party. 1989, Tiananmen Square protests for greater freedom. It worked, but there's still tyranny today, but at least we all remember the courage of that Tiananmen Square. In 2003, the women in Liberia started a mass peace movement by singing and praying that brought an end to the Liberian Civil War. No mean thing. That was terrific. In 2003, the Rose Revolution in Georgia that ousted the Russian-supported president. In 2011, the Jasmine Revolution in Tunisia, 28-day resistance that ousted this corrupt president. And 2018, the Gaza March of Return. All the thousands of people that were shot, they were unarmed. And your heart breaks for the Palestinians when you see them being dealt with as in such horrific manner. But now that galvanized the world that, yes, we do have apartheid in Israel, and apartheid is racism. So why is it we're not protesting, and every member of Congress and the Defense Department to stop every single penny aid to Israel, which is $3 to $5 billion a year, and put every penny of that redirected into the ghettos to de-ghettoize America, to bring jobs back to those hard-hit areas where there's high unemployment, to bring it back into public schools. So you see, they can continue being as violent and nasty as they want, and there will be those of us who continue being nonviolent, and hopefully the nonviolent will be included in discussions. Right now, the nonviolent are not, and I believe most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, want to see change without violence and without name-calling and without anyone who doesn't agree with them being called a racist. That canard doesn't work. It really is alienating. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to end our show today with the first of a three-part series with Dana Allman, America's leading homeopathic teacher. Sorry, I just looked at the clock. We're running out of time. So we're going to have Dana on our next program for a double segment. So we're going to have him on for 20 minutes on Monday and 10 minutes on Tuesday. It's going to be fine. I didn't want to start it and then stop it once he gets into the hard battle that homeopaths have been fighting against Wikipedia and their misinformation campaign. Here's what I want to share now. This Sunday at 1 o'clock, I will be doing the most comprehensive, in-depth discussion. I don't know how long it's going to last. Many of you know that my discussions on my webinars go long. My last one was 6 hours. But it's going to start at 1 o'clock. And for everyone in this audience who is concerned about the world we live in, concerned about the breakdown of social order, concerned about the violence, concerned about rules and laws that are passed in different states like New York and California and Washington State, where there's mandatory vaccines, where you will be forced and your children forced, no matter what your age and health condition, to take vaccines that are experimental and ultimately going to be extremely dangerous, or just loss of quality of life, and you want to become a part of a more independent, more wholesome way of moving into the next part of your life, the next chapter of your life, as millions and millions of Americans are. So I'm going to help you because I've finished all the research on this, the best places to live in the United States and even outside. But it's very detailed. It's very, very compressed, meaning I have to look at where are all the gangs. You got millions of gang members. Well, they're in Oakland. If I told you the biggest gangs are in Los Angeles and also Oklahoma City and all these, you think, what are they in Oklahoma City for? You got to know what's going on out there. Where are the places that we're now in a perpetual drought? For the next 50 generations, according to the latest science, there are areas in the United States that will still be in drought. So we need to get off the neoliberal grid. We need to get off of it, become your own boss, narrow down, develop hobbies, earn income from new ventures you create, get rid of unnecessary expenses, get rid of clutter and unnecessary items in your life, live more simply, stop expensive habits like eating out all the time and buying things you don't need, learn how to grow things on the land, learn how to compost, learn how to do mushroom growing and medicinal herbs and all the other things that you can, learn how to harvest and harness water, hydroponic units, learn how to do all the things that allow you to get away from Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Wikipedia, MySpace. Limit your social media activity because all they're doing is data mining you. And learn how to encrypt your emails. Learn how to hide your IP address and protect yourself from identity theft. Learn how to drive less. All the things like, you know, the things I'm going to teach you are all the ways to get off the grid and how to end debt, get out of debt. So these are some of the things I'm going to take. So just escaping all the ways that we live our lives, the corporate matrix. How do we get off the corporate matrix? How do we become autonomous, caring people? Where are the most progressive people in America moving? You know, where can I live where there's water and soil and nature and wholesome, healthy people who can talk with me instead of screaming at me, who can appreciate what I'm doing in my way and you're doing in your way without trying to shame you because you're not politically awoke. Yeah, there's still places in this world for adults. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So if you want to be a part of that, I'm going to be giving you a ton of material, more than you've ever gotten in your life. It's taken a lot of research to do this, so those who are on the webinar will have it. I don't know if we have room or not. I haven't checked with New York. So you can go to prn.fm, and it'll show you how to sign up for the webinar on Sunday at 1 o'clock. See a lot of you then. The rest of you, I'll see you back here on Monday.